Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something a bit different, taking a shortcut, really, to some incredibly valuable insights.
Yeah, we're diving into the Kick-Ass with Mel Robbins Audible original. It's basically Mel coaching 8 different people in like real-time private sessions.
Exactly. It's like getting access to this high-level personal coaching, but, you know, we're the fly on the wall. And our job today is to pull out the biggest lessons for you.
And it's fascinating because people come in saying, this is my problem,
Yeah. Right?
Like Evelyn with her fixed mindset, or Kyle struggling with sobriety and pride.
Or Tara feeling like she couldn't be a loving person.
Right. But what you see over and over is that the problem they think they have, it's almost always just a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
The real gold is digging down to find the actual underlying thing holding them back.
Yeah, the issues are all over the place. Some funny, some really tough, always very real, very intimate, makes it super relatable.
Definitely.
So our mission today is to synthesize all that. We're pulling out, what, 5 big universal ideas and the tools that go with them.
Yep. Ideas about habits, mindset, getting goals done.
Things you can use like right away to break those patterns that keep you feeling stuck.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it. So idea number one, the mechanics of changing habits, especially the destructive ones.
Well, often we think breaking habits is just about, you know, grit. Sheer willpower.
Right, just stop doing it.
But Mel's approach is much more mechanical. It starts with figuring out the real function of the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Not just what you do, but why.
Okay, like with Kim, the client who wanted to quit smoking.
Exactly, that's a perfect example. So normally you'd think, okay, nicotine addiction, patches, cold turkey, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But Mel digs deeper and finds out, for Kim, smoking wasn't just physical. It was her go-to coping mechanism for stress.
Okay.
And even more important, it was a way to procrastinate, a strategy.
Procrastinate? How so?
Well, she'd use the just one more cigarette idea as like a buffer,
yeah.
Little pause before she had to do something uncomfortable or tackle a hard task.
So the habit's function was avoidance, delaying the tough stuff.
Precisely. And that's the key insight. Once you realize your habit, smoking, scrolling, snacking, whatever, is actually serving some hidden purpose, like shielding you from discomfort.
Your whole perspective changes.
The whole paradigm shifts, yeah.
Yeah?
That's what allowed Kim to finally quit. It applies everywhere, like stress eating when you're actually bored or anxious.
So it's the function, not the substance itself. The habit really means I get to put off the hard thing for a bit.
You got it. And once you see that trigger and function, you need tools to actually start doing something different, to separate from that old identity.
Which brings us to the first tool.
Right. The main one for that separation is what she calls creating an old and new chapter.
Okay, explain that. How does it work?
It's pretty straightforward, actually. You consciously define who you used to be, your old chapter.
Like the shy kid or Kim the Rebel, as she put it.
Exactly. And then you define who you're choosing to become, the new chapter, the aspirational you.
The badass warrior or Kim possibility.
Yeah. And anchoring your goal to this new identity makes taking action feel more possible. It primes you for it.
And that's where the 5-second rule comes in, right? The countdown.
That's the ignition switch.
Yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, G. You use it to interrupt the hesitation, bypass that inner critic that wants to keep you in the old chapter.
And just physically move into the new action before you can talk yourself out of it.
Exactly. It's an immediate counter to fear-based hesitation.
Which connects really nicely to another tool for dealing with that inner critic, characterizing negative self-talk.
Oh, absolutely. This one's great. We see with Steve and another client, he had a really tough upbringing and was stuck in this deep victim mentality, lots of self-judgment.
Yeah. So what's the technique?
It's simple, but kind of brilliant. You take that nasty critical voice in your head and you turn it into a character. Give it a name.
Steven called his Sharon.
Right. And the power in that is huge.
Yeah.
Because the moment Sharon starts her nonsense, you know, the shame, the you're not good enough stuff, he can literally tell her, shut up, Sharon.
Huh. Okay, I see. It externalizes it.
Exactly. It stops being this overwhelming internal feeling and becomes just this annoying voice you can dismiss.
It proves you aren't that voice. You're the one listening, and you can choose to shut it down.
Creates instant distance. You shift from being the victim of the voice to being the observer of the voice. Really empowering.
Okay, so let's move to the second big idea. This zooms out a bit to addiction and breaking those really big, stubborn patterns.
Right. And the term researchers often use, which Mel adopts, is habit dysfunction.
Habit dysfunction. Okay, why that term?
Well, Calling it a dysfunction helps take away some of the moral weight and stigma of the word addiction. It reframes it as a mechanism that's gone wrong.
Makes sense. Less judgment, more focus on the how.
Exactly. But the reason these dysfunctions feel so impossible to break is because of all the emotion tied up in them, the shame, the withdrawal. Sometimes your whole identity feels wrapped up in the pattern.
So it feels way bigger than just a habit.
For sure. But if we treat it like a dysfunctional habit, how do we fix it?
Well, the strategy comes back to recognizing that all habits, even the really destructive ones, run on autopilot. They have predictable triggers and follow set behavioral loops.
Cues, right. Time of day, seeing certain people, being in a specific place.
Or internal states, like stress, as we saw with Kim.
Yeah. And once you can really pinpoint those specific triggers,
then you can use that replacement technique.
Exactly. It's called if-then planning. It's about making the decision ahead of time.
Okay. How does that work in practice?
So you identify a trigger. Let's say sitting down on the couch after work usually triggers grabbing snacks.
Okay. Common one.
Your if-then plan would be, if I sit on the couch after 6 p.m., then I will immediately get up and make a cup of tea instead. Or change into workout clothes, whatever the positive swap is.
Ah, so you preload the new behavior. You decide before the trigger hits.
Exactly. It takes the decision-making burden out of the moment when your willpower might be low. The choice is already made.
You're just swapping one automatic pattern for another, hopefully better one.
That's the idea. It's a really practical way to short-circuit habit dysfunction.
Okay, now for the third big idea. And you flagged this one as potentially challenging.
Yeah, this one requires some serious self-honesty. It gets into victimhood and responsibility.
Uh-oh. Okay, what's the insight?
Well, Mel puts forward this idea, and it can sound kind of harsh at first, but it's worth really sitting with. She says, essentially,
but what?
If you have a problem that you have been trying to fix forever and you're not making any progress, I guarantee you don't have any interest in fixing it.
Oof.
And she continues, and in fact, you might be using that problem as a way to get out of taking responsibility.
Wow. Okay, wait. Isn't that a bit much? Like, what about genuine trauma or deep psychological blocks? Isn't that minimizing real struggle by just calling it lack of interest?
That's a really fair pushback. And I don't think she's saying the pain or the struggle isn't real. Not at all.
Okay.
It's more about looking at the secondary game. What maybe unconsciously are you getting from holding on to this problem?
Secondary game? Like what?
Maybe it gets you sympathy. Maybe it gives you a reason not to try for that bigger, scarier goal, like starting a business or having that really difficult conversation, you know, you need to have.
Ah, okay. So the problem becomes a kind of shield.
Yeah. What's fascinating, or maybe confronting, is that it forces you to ask, is the discomfort of staying stuck actually less painful in some weird way than the perceived pain or risk of changing?
If the answer is yes, then you're kind of choosing to stay stuck because the problem serves a purpose.
It has a utility, yeah. It's not about blame. It's about recognizing the function again. What job is this unfixable problem doing for you?
That completely reframes it. It's about choice, even if it doesn't feel like it.
And that ties right into another mind-blowing point she makes about responsibility, this idea of manipulation by avoidance.
Manipulation by avoidance. That sounds sneaky. What does she mean?
We usually think manipulation is like these big overt schemes, right?
Yeah, twisting things, lying outright.
But Mel points out it's often much quieter. It's in the small compromises we make constantly, she argues. When you're afraid to upset other people and you use that fear to justify not being yourself, it's a form of manipulation.
Whoa, how is not upsetting people manipulation? That seems like being nice.
Think about it, though. If you consistently hide your true feelings, your needs, your opinions, if you lie by omission or just stay silent to avoid conflict or hurting someone's feelings,
okay,
you're controlling the situation by controlling the information they get. You're managing their reaction by curating their reality.
Oh, wow. You're preventing an authentic reaction by presenting a false self.
Exactly. And often you do this while feeling like the victim yourself. Oh, I can't be myself around them. But the choice to hide is the manipulation.
That hits hard. So the question for you listening becomes, what do you do or not do to avoid upsetting people, to dodge confrontation?
And where are you maybe lying or just keeping quiet about who you really are in order to keep the peace?
Recognizing that is huge. That's the first step to being more authentic, right? And maybe having better relationships because you stop blaming others for your silence.
Absolutely. Massive step.
Okay, so if that section was about facing tough truths about the past and present, how do we actually build the future we want? Idea number four.
Yes, this is a really actionable goal-setting technique Mel calls time traveling.
Time traveling sounds fun. How does it work?
It's designed to get you out of vague wishing and into concrete action. Step one, you vividly imagine your life, say, 2 years from now, but like really specific detail.
Not just, I want to be happy.
No. It's like watching a movie of your future self. Where do you live? Who are you spending time with? What does your average morning look like? You know, maybe you're picturing being the most amazing supportive partner to someone. What does that actually look like day to day?
Got it. Super specific visualization. What's step two?
This is the crucial part. Once you see that successful future self clearly, you then make a list. A list of all the habits, behaviors, skills, and mindsets that future you has clearly perfected to get there.
Ah, so you're basically getting advice from your future self.
Exactly. You follow the advice of the person you know you're capable of becoming in 2 years.
That gives you the roadmap.
Yep. And then the only thing left is, well, do it. Start implementing that list today.
It kind of bypasses the I don't know what to do loop because your future self just told you.
Precisely. It leverages future wisdom for present action.
And didn't she give Marquise, one of the clients, some related practical advice too?
Yes, simple but powerful. If you know what you want to achieve, find three people who are already doing it successfully.
Savvy.
Ask them how they do it. Mm-hmm. Learn their habits, their mindset. Don't reinvent the wheel.
Makes sense. Okay, fifth and final big idea. This brings us back to the roots of these patterns, doesn't it?
Yes, it connects everything. It's about understanding what Mel calls childhood strategies.
Childhood strategies, meaning habits we learn way back.
Exactly. We all develop these deep, often subconscious ways of coping when we're kids, just to navigate our family or school environment.
And we carry them into adulthood.
Right. We carry them forward, but often they become outdated, even dysfunctional, in our adult lives.
Like Kim again, the smoking example tied back to childhood.
Perfectly. She traced her pattern of avoidance, quitting things when they got uncomfortable, all the way back to fourth grade.
What happened then?
She quit baton twirling because she was terrified of performing in front of people, afraid of being laughed at.
So quitting became her strategy.
It became her go-to life strategy. Right. Quit any situation that feels uncomfortable or risky to protect yourself from potential shame or judgment. That childhood decision echoed through her adult life, manifesting as those cigarette breaks, little moments of quitting, of avoidance.
Wow. So procrastination, self-sabotage, it might just be an old coping mechanism that doesn't fit anymore.
Very often, yes.
Yeah.
Which leads to maybe the most profound piece of advice in the whole series, a fundamental reframing.
Okay.
Mel says, stop asking yourself, what's wrong with me? Because that just leads down a rabbit hole of shame and self-blame.
Right. That feels familiar. So what should we ask instead?
Ask, what happened to me?
What happened to me? How does that shift things?
It shifts you from judgment to curiosity,
mm-hmm.
from self-criticism to self-compassion and understanding. When did this pattern start? What was going on back then? What was I trying to protect myself from?
Okay, I see. It's about understanding the origin story of the habit, not just condemning the habit itself.
Exactly. Because once you understand why you developed that defense mechanism, you can start to address the original issue, not just fight the symptom.
Mm.
You realize it's not a fundamental flaw in you.
It's just a pattern that worked once upon a time, maybe when you were small, and now it's time for an update.
You got it. That understanding is what allows for real change.
So just to recap these five big takeaways from those sessions. First, identify the real trigger and function of a habit, not just the surface behavior.
Yeah. Then use tools like the old and new chapter to define your identity shift and maybe shut up Sharon to manage that inner critic.
Third, see addiction as habit dysfunction and use if-then planning to replace patterns proactively.
Fourth, get brutally honest about avoidance. Are you using problems as excuses? Are you manipulating through silence?
And fifth, use time traveling to get clear on your future goals and trace current struggles back to childhood strategies by asking, what happened to me, not what's wrong with me?
That's a pretty solid blueprint for getting unstuck, right? Moving past just managing symptoms.
Absolutely. You basically now have this distilled toolkit to fight procrastination, challenge self-sabotage, understand your past, and really start building the future you want.
It really comes down to applying these insights, recognizing the patterns, and then consciously choosing different actions. Functional change.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive into Mel Robbins' coaching insights on habits, avoidance, and taking responsibility, here's that final thought for you to chew on.
Lay it on us.
If the only real cost of finally overcoming your biggest, most persistent struggle is simply losing your best, most reliable excuse, are you willing to pay that price?